Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, March 8th, 2014. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for today is we, in the United States, we're in a state of pre-impeachment. And this is the exact formulation of Lyndon LaRouche, given all the events and the strategic urgency that we're now in. And I'm very glad we have two guests to speak about this. One is going to be joining us while the show is in progress, and that's Jeffrey Steinberg, who is our EIR counterintelligence editor and close associate of Mr. LaRouche. And as I say, he'll be joining us in progress, because first we have the chance to talk to my co-host, but he's in California off-site, Harley Schlanger. Welcome, Harley.
Thank you, Marcia. Good to be with you.
And Harley is speaking to us from Los Angeles, where the Democratic Party State Convention is taking place. Harley, you know, is the Western State spokesman for Mr. LaRouche. Harley's in the thick of things. This is a three-day convention. It opened yesterday. It'll close on Sunday. And he is among the Democrats, among the, in fact, patriots at this convention are Keisha Rogers from Texas, who is joining her fellow candidate for federal office, Michael Steger, from San Francisco. The two of them are on the National Policy Committee of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, because Keisha has come fresh from placing in the runoff for the Democratic Party candidacy for Senate, U.S. Senate from Texas. The election took place March 4th. Harley's going to be saying some things about that. It took place last Tuesday. And after all the king's horses and queen's horses and queen's men, including Obama, flunkies in the Texas Democratic Party, tried to prevent Keisha Rogers from winning, they failed. And she, Harley will give more particulars about it, but May 27, I believe, is the runoff. And this is points up the fact that what Keisha Rogers and Michael Steger are doing, Michael Steger is in a June primary for the Democratic Party nomination, and he intends to unseat Nancy Pelosi. What the two of them are doing, they formed an alignment of patriots of Texas and California in the West as a national and international effort to, in particular, deal with the physical chemistry reality of our Western states. Namely, it's in a severe historic drought, and it makes the point we have to change course radically from the Wall Street, London, dead monetarist policies where you can't build infrastructure, you can't do anything. In fact, you're having austerity to the death and a push for war. Instead, Keisha Rogers and Michael Steger are leading the charge for the launching the North American Water and Power Alliance, relaunching nuclear power with achieving fusion power in the forefront, and making way for that by taking the emergency action that we must initiate impeachment of Obama, get him out of the way, put in the Glass-Steagall banking kind of credit system that can allow rebuilding the West and, in fact, collaborating with nations like Russia and China in the Pacific instead of pushing for war. Now, I've just summarized that because we have a lot of particulars and a lot of strategic updates that are going to come from Harley and Jeff. But I want to say one more thing about this is that you're going to hear from Harley that I think Keisha Rogers, Michael Steger have already put on the agenda what I just described that's necessary for mankind out there in California. Keisha did it in her election. And Lyndon LaRouche, personally, in particular, is leading the charge on putting reality before the world. He has been on different Russian media, for example, including the leading national network television, Russia Number One. He was on, interviewed and played on top nightly news on Thursday night. That would be the 7th, I think. And because what we have, I'm sure you're all watching headlines about Ukraine, Crimea, Russia, but the issue isn't just a delimited question of very dangerous brinksmanship and pushing war there, which is what Obama's doing. I didn't mention yet, but I hope you know that he issued an ex cathedra executive order on Thursday, the 6th, just announcing that the U.S. was in a state of national emergency over lies that he gave about how we're threatened because of what's going on in Ukraine and Crimea. But anyway, back to the fact of Lyndon LaRouche being the sought-after go-to person for explaining what's going on in the world. I want to just, before I turn to Harley in California, read Lynn's introduction, what he said on Russian TV about the situation. He said, look, all this is, meaning what's going on in Crimea and Ukraine, look at the strategic situation. We've reached a point where there's been a general breakdown of the transatlantic region economically. This has been going on ever since the assassination of John F. Kennedy. It's been a deliberate process to destroy the United States and to create a new universe. It reached the point that the breakdown of the transatlantic system is so severe, and under the influence of Wall Street in particular, Wall Street and London are the same thing, that therefore they're bankrupt and they're about to close down. Therefore, it's come to the point that they're determined to destroy the Eurasian part of the planet, that is by controlling it and looting it. So that's how he began his report to the Russian people on Russian TV, which was filmed here in the United States. And I do hope people look at that. Go on LaRouchePack.com and you can see the video there. So this is kind of the mobilization. I've just given you the scope of what we have. Now, let me say one thing. Harley, you'll be glad to know Jeff Steinberg has now joined us. He's here sitting at the table. And Jeff, I'll tell you that Harley's there in Los Angeles, and he also has cross questions for you. But Harley, why don't you start off?
Well, what you reported on the response of Lyndon LaRouche to the insane actions of President Obama is what we're leading with at the convention. And it's coming out in a very interesting way. I mean, the statement put out by Mr. LaRouche basically said that Obama's declaration of a national emergency through an executive order is proof that he has to be removed. That's the whole question of the pre-impeachment. And the question is that we have to bring to the American people an understanding of two things. One, that we are on a course toward war, and I'm sure Jeff will have more on that. But that, secondly, the American people are being subjected to Goebbels-style media propaganda. That while the rest of the world is getting at least some understanding that the President of the United States is supporting a Nazi regime that carried out a coup against a duly elected government, and using that as the basis of moving toward a thermonuclear confrontation, most of the rest of the world has at least some inkling that there's a different story going on. Now, what we're doing at the Democratic Convention is we have a deployment of Michael Steger, who's running for Pelosi's seat, and Keisha Rogers, who's in a Democratic Party runoff for U.S. Senate in Texas. And they're spearheading a drive to make this point to people that Obama must go, that unless we get Obama out, the chances of survival of the United States and the American people are almost nil. Now, what's interesting is that on the various subordinate issues which are connected to this question, such as Glass-Steagall to be used against crushing Wall Street, such as development of the NOAPA plan to address the drought, or the opposition to NSA spying, or drone warfare, or the Obama continuation of the Bush-Cheney regime change policies, and even Obamacare as opposed to single payer, most of the people we're talking to on issues are in agreement with us, which points out something that Lynn has been emphasizing over and over and over in his papers recently, which is that the way people think of things from the standpoint of issues is shaped by a lower level of thinking, which maybe even it shouldn't be called thinking, that in fact it's the question of principle which is the basis for determining policy. And if people stay on this question of issues, they can be manipulated. And just an example of that, Michael did a brilliant job yesterday at two caucus meetings where he spoke before hundreds of California Democrats. And he had a very short period of time. They're giving candidates between 30 seconds and 2 minutes. But what Michael did is he identified that we're mobilizing against Wall Street with Glass-Steagall to end the drought with major infrastructure projects in the tradition of Franklin Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy. And people are agreeing. They're nodding. They're on the edges of their seat. Finally, they're hearing something they like. And then he says, and we have to address the insanity of going to war with Russia over Ukraine. And again, people are nodding. And he said, and to do this, we must impeach Barack Obama. And the room goes completely silent. Now, in both cases, there were a few people who said, yep, and you heard a scattered applause. And then as the shock went across the room, you had a few of the real Obama bots start booing. Not a loud booing or a unanimous by any means. And afterwards, people came up to Michael and said, boy, you've got guts. And he said, well, you've got to have guts, too. You've got to back us on this. So that's where we are at the convention. There's agreement on so-called issues, but there's not an understanding that behind the issues there are principles which are life and death matters for the American people.
Right. Well, let me ask you at this point, Jeff, as I say, Jeff is here, but do you want to say more about the election on Tuesday in which,
sure,
because of this opportunity. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, this demonstrates the point that another point Lynn has been making, which is that most Americans, if they had a chance to vote on it, would vote Obama out. Most people are unhappy about almost everything in their lives, and a lot of it they do correctly identify as being related to Obama being an agent of a foreign power that's out to crush and destroy the United States. Now, the interesting thing is that once Keisha began to get some traction because of our day-to-day deployments, our organizers going into small towns, into the big towns, calls going out, there was a poll that came out. And, you know, the poll, there's a lot of controversy around the poll, but it showed Keisha in the lead. And that was used as an excuse for the Democratic Party of Texas, which we really mean a bunch of flunkies working for Obama and Obama's consultants and campaign operatives, decided to launch a series of slanders against Keisha. They got the Texas Democratic Party chairman to put out a statement saying she's not a Democrat, don't vote for her. They insisted that she be uninvited to a number of Democratic Party debates and events she had been invited to, because she wouldn't take a loyalty oath. And Keisha's response to that was to shame these people who were telling her that by saying, you need a loyalty oath to get people to support the president? I have a loyalty to the Constitution of the United States, not to a man who's violating that Constitution. And so everywhere these things came up, Keisha, on principle, stuck to her guns, that we're going to move to get Obama out, and we're going to reorganize the U.S. economy based on the principles of federal credit, great projects, and so on. And this resonates. And one of the things that I always point out is that when people hear, oh, she's against Obama, a lot of Democrats say, okay, then that's who I'm going to vote for, because she won two Democratic primaries previous to this for U.S. Congress. And so the Democratic Party had a two-pronged strategy, one to denounce Keisha, but at the same time, to suppress the vote. And they did that by essentially making sure there was no attempt to get an outreach to bring new voters in, whether they're young people or older people or traditional Democrats. They did none of that. They spent their money to give money to political operatives to mobilize what you might call loyal or mindless supporters of whatever the Democratic Party says. And that was the Alamil vote, and that's her main opponent. They thought they could get over 50% by doing that. Now, when election day came, he fell below the 50%, which means that more than 50% of the Democratic voters rejected the Obama candidate for Senate. And Keisha came in second with almost 22%, and three others divided up the rest. And this provided another shock, because they really believed that they could suppress the vote and just get out their loyal hacks to vote. And they don't realize that they're destroying the party by doing this. In fact, Marcia, one final point on this. The total vote in the Democratic primary was only about 500,000 on the Democratic side, and it was 1.3 million on the Republican side. So by refusing to debate issues and by clinging desperately to this failed, insane president, the Democratic Party is killing itself in Texas. And if we don't break that, this president will kill the nation.
Right. So do you have any other questions, Jeff, of Harley on this? Because I think it's stark. And the and Harley on the convention, in the convention itself, there are several caucuses, right? What you were just describing is one case where Mike Steger addressed them. But this is going on.
Well, he spoke at the Environmental Caucus last night, and he said, look, the greatest threat to the environment is thermonuclear war. And everyone just said yes. So he spoke at the Labor Caucus. Keisha spoke this morning at the Women's Caucus. But, this is part of the problem with the Democratic Party. There are all these caucuses, and then they get together in a room, and they hear droning from Nancy Pelosi and some of the national figures. And
O'Malley from Maryland talking about Obamacare and... Yeah,
so it's deadening. And so the people who are there who actually have a mind that's left will come out and talk to us. And we expect over the course of today and tomorrow that we'll have an engagement of one sort or another with at least half the delegates. And in some cases, they grab our leaflets and throw them away and walk away screaming. And they look like they're the crazy homeless guy on the street. But you have a lot of people who want to talk, who are talking with us, and even where they disagree or think they disagree, they come around and say, well, I don't like this, I don't like that Obama's doing, but do we have to call for his impeachment because the Republicans are so bad? And we say, forget the Republicans. If we had a president who fought for these Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy, LaRouche policies, we'd sweep the country. We'd get rid of the Tea Party. We'd get rid of the phony Republicans who would make Lincoln vomit to hear them speak. So it's really up to us to give these Democrats and the citizens as a whole a sense that they can, ultimately, they are sovereign. They can make policy, provided they start to think on this higher level that Lyndon LaRouche has been insisting upon.
And in particular, tonight there is an event right there in downtown Los Angeles in the midst of the Democratic Party convention that Mike Steger's candidacy is hosting with Keisha Rogers, yourself, and Mike Steger. And would you say something more about their commitment to lead this alignment of leadership that you're talking about?
Well, what's interesting is to see the reaction to Michael and Keisha from ordinary party people, not the party officials. But even where they may not fully agree or understand it, they see two courageous people who will not buckle under pressure. Keisha, when she says, we're going to impeach Obama, people say, are you really going to do that? And she says, hell yes, and they believe her because she's totally believable because she's speaking from what her total commitment is. Same thing with Michael. Michael was really brilliant last night in his interventions. Very calm, very relaxed, not hyperventilating or shrieking or anything, just saying what he had to say, that if we want to save this country, we have to impeach Obama. And unflappable. And people do see that and respect that. Whereas if you see the president now, this guy's turning himself into a pretzel. Every time he speaks, he's more contorted. He's more self-contradictory. Because he's a non-entity, and he's I think being a little bit confused by his talking points coming over the teleprompter. So anyway, tonight we are having an event. It's going to be at the Marriott Hotel on Olympic Boulevard in downtown Los Angeles, which is right down the street from the convention center. And the featured speakers, I'll be a moderator there. The featured speakers will be Michael Steger and Keisha Rogers. And
right.
It starts at 6 p.m. California time.
All right. It's right down from the Westin, from the convention. It's at the Marriott. And, you know, Harley, just what you said about Keisha and Mike, Rogers and Steger, is how Lyndon LaRouche opened some remarks to associates and staff this morning when he said, the crisis is the submission of the planet to the British Empire. Wall Street's the British Empire. And naturally, Lynn doesn't stint on the fact that we're up against evil. But if we submit to it, that's the crisis. Jeff, do you want to say more?
Look, I think if you go back and look at the past two presidencies, I think the issue of partisanship is one excuse that people use for, to use Mr. LaRouche's blunt language, for behaving like whores for Wall Street. People are bought off on both parties. We would have never had an Obama presidency and the crisis that we're in now if the Democrats hadn't behaved like whores for Wall Street in refusing to impeach George W. Bush and Dick Cheney when they committed impeachable crimes on a scale that Obama has managed to significantly surpass. So we're dealing with a problem that requires some very, very blunt language, because we've now gotten to the point where I think there's three things I would say have happened just in the past few days that really dramatically underscore exactly how deep this moment of crisis is. Number one, the fact that the Russians have recognized that they've got to play the LaRouche card very directly. I assume, Marsh, you mentioned earlier that Lynn has been featured on domestic Russian television virtually every day this week. His wife, Helga Zepp LaRouche, founder of the Schiller Institute, was on Russian TV, interviewed by Voice of Russia. So that in and of itself, I think, reflects a certain recognition that this fight to avoid a thermonuclear war of extinction is going to be won or lost here in the United States. And the Russians are casting their vote for Lyndon LaRouche and the people who are standing up against this tyranny here. Secondly, the, you know, as Harley emphasized, Keisha's victory this week was really quite dramatic. The national media, for days and days before the primary vote, were highlighting the fact that Keisha Rogers was campaigning as a LaRouche Democrat on a platform of impeaching the Democratic president of the United States. And the fact that she won 22% of the vote and is in a runoff on May 27th is really, you know, I think an extraordinary indication of the gap between what the political whores are trying to do to suppress this hatred of Obama and what the population really thinks. Now, the third thing is that Obama went ahead and made an outright declaration of dictatorship with this announcement of an executive order declaring that the Ukraine crisis is a national emergency. Now, in point of fact, the Joint Chiefs of Staff presented the President and the National Security Council with an assessment of the Ukraine situation. And what they said is that the United States has no strategic interest in the Crimea or in the Ukraine situation that rises to the level of disrupting the U.S.-Russia military cooperation on some genuinely crucial issues, such as the U.S. drawdown and withdrawal from Afghanistan. on that operation, we are dependent on what's called the Northern Route, which runs through Central Asia and Russia. And so the military command, the senior advisors to the President of the United States, said that while the Russians clearly have strategic, inviolable interests in the Crimea situation, for one thing, their 40-year treaty on the access to the Black Sea fleet base at Sevastopol in Crimea. This is something that is of absolute profound strategic importance to the Russians. This is their only access to the Mediterranean, and it is an inviolable factor for them. We have no inviolable interest in Ukraine. Ukraine is an important country, but it's not a NATO country, and therefore we have no treaty obligations to Ukraine, and we should pay very close attention to all of the strategic issues between the U.S. and Russia on the positive side, and at the same time realize this is a potential hair trigger for nuclear war. So when President Obama declared a national emergency around the Ukraine situation, he did so in direct opposition to the advice and evaluation he was given by his most senior military people. And last night on the PBS NewsHour, General Dempsey gave a lengthy interview in which he made basically the same points. And he reiterated, he said, look, this is a situation that can and must be solved diplomatically. And he pointed out that he himself had been in phone contact with his Russian counterpart, General Gerasimov, two times in the last 24 hours. He said, we're talking continuously. We have a disagreement here. They have one view of what happened in the Ukraine. Our government, certainly President Obama, is presenting a completely different narrative, but it must be settled by diplomacy. And the interviewer, Judy Woodruff, was pressing him, can this go to a military confrontation? Are there potential military dimensions to this? And General Dempsey said, absolutely, of course there are. And this is why diplomacy is so critical right now. He said, we do have treaty obligations under Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty to our NATO allies, and we will not abandon that. So, you know, he's both on the one hand saying we have vital issues that we must collaborate on with Russia. We have treaty obligations to our NATO partners, and the whole thing must be handled by diplomacy. Now, the problem here is that General Martin Dempsey is not President of the United States. The Commander-in-Chief is Barack Obama, and he has shown no inclination to take any kind of measures to avoid a war that can become a thermonuclear confrontation showdown in which we wind up with no history of World War III because nobody is left alive to comment after the fact because mankind has been exterminated. Putin understands that. Dempsey understands that. Gerasimov understands it. I don't know, maybe even Kerry understands it. But Obama is a pawn of Wall Street and London, the power center of a bankrupt financial system centered in the transatlantic region. And it's the desperation of the people running that system and who own Obama, which is driving the world towards a potential war of extermination. And that's the cold, hard reality. And, you know, as Marcia mentioned, in the discussion today, Lynn used very, very blunt language because there is no viable alternative at this point, where things stand as of just the last 48 hours, to Obama's impeachment right away.
Right. In fact, I'll tell you, I know the expression that Mr. LaRouche used among those who agree on issues, agree it's dangerous, agree it could lead. He said, it's time for this sickening innocence to be cured, to be confronted, to be, and which of course is what Harley was just describing, that Mike Steger is doing among those who can sort themselves out to be among the people of goodwill, but they have to now, we now have to act.
Marcia, on that point, you could see on the faces of people when Michael hit this war danger and the need for impeachment, that there was a genuine shock. I mean, jaws dropped. You hear that expression, but it really happened. Because, of course, no one expects someone to say that. But after the shock wore off, you had, it was really funny because people didn't boo right away. They had to check themselves to see what they were really thinking about it. They looked around at everyone else, and they waited until one person booed. It was the real herd reaction. But individually afterwards, people said, do you really think Obama's that bad? Or people came up to Michael and said, boy, I wish I had your guts. And that's exactly the point that Lynn is making about giving up this fake innocence and actually functioning as strategic thinkers.
We've had discussions on Capitol Hill over the course of the last 3-4 weeks with Democratic members of Congress. I'm not going to mention their names because the conversations were in private discussions with our activists on Capitol Hill. But members of Congress, longstanding Democrats, shaking and trembling and telling us how much they despise Obama and that everything he does, everything he is the antithesis of everything that they believe should be there in a Democratic Party president. I mean, you know, over 50% of the likely voters and eligible voters in this country, both, are not affiliated with either the Democratic or Republican Party. They're sickened by the cowardice and gutlessness. And now it really comes down to the fact that there's got to be a broad outpouring within the population into Capitol Hill, because Congress is the instrument for impeachment. And people are going to just have to basically challenge the gutlessness and the whorishness of members of Congress who in many, many instances privately will tell you one thing, but then have a bout of cowardice and will not act on it. So we've got to basically create enough of a groundswell, and we're talking in the immediate days ahead. This is not something that has a long fuse on it, to get this guy out of office. We had a diplomatic luncheon about 3 weeks ago with Helga Zepp LaRouche. And around the time that she gave that presentation, Lynn had said that we have perhaps until the first week or so of March before we're staring directly at nuclear war. And a lot of senior diplomats from all over the world, I think there were 33 countries represented at this event, many of them said afterwards that they see the war danger, but they were shocked and thought that Mr. LaRouche had gone way, way, way out on a limb being so precise about this early March conjuncture. Many of them contacted us days later or in the last week and said, how did he know? Because the situation in his mind was not defined by moving chess pieces around Ukraine or Russia or anything like that. He was looking at the fact that you have a desperate financial oligarchy that's facing a moment of total collapse of the system, and that they must be in a position to literally loot that part of the world, the Eurasian Asia-Pacific region, which is still relatively prospering. They've got to loot everything that they possibly can to save their bankrupt system. And it's that factor. It's the factor of the mindset of the people at the top of this Anglo-Dutch Wall Street system, and the fact that they have their hands on Obama's hand on the nuclear button. That's the danger here. So, you know, I just think that we are at a moment where we have to issue an extraordinary call to the American people to force their elected representatives to fulfill their constitutional mandate and get this guy out. He's committed a laundry list of impeachable crimes, the Libya war, the unitary executive, the spying on Americans, the looting of the economy for Wall Street. They're all there. The bill of indictment could be written in moments and could be rammed through the House and then a trial in the Senate. But the members of Congress who know something but are too cowardly to act on it have to be told in no uncertain terms that they've got to act now, and their constituents expect nothing less than that of them in this moment of real crisis.
Right, and people should know Congress is to be back in session next week. It, even if they weren't, the action can be taken, but they are. Right. And they're, apropos of what, Harley, you said at the beginning about there is a sense of that a sixth sense people have that the Goebbels propaganda machine is so dramatic, of saying snow is black, good is bad, bad is good, that the things coming out, for example, yesterday, I think the ambassador of Russia in New York City,
right,
to the UN, called for an investigation of the pedigree of the
snipers.
You may want to say something about this.
Right.
And also it bears on the makeup of the current government that Obama said is the legitimate government of Ukraine, when in fact it's by the process in which it got there, by the sniper revelation, and by its pedigree of being Nazis, it couldn't be more illegitimate. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, about 3, maybe now 4 weeks ago, LPAC put out a fact sheet. It was circulated all over the place. Every single member of Congress, every congressional committee was inundated with copies of it. It laid out in very straightforward terms the fact that the key players in the Maidan Square were part of a second and third generation of Nazi collaborators who had been saved from prosecution at Nuremberg at the end of World War II because British MI6 and people like Alan Dulles of the CIA had recruited these war criminals and protected them to use them as terrorists against the Soviet Union in the early decades of the Cold War. Remember the death of Roosevelt, Truman coming in, Churchill going to Fulton, Missouri, and delivering his famous Iron Curtain speech. So these Nazi networks, including extensive Ukrainian Nazi networks associated with Stepan Bandera, were protected, and those were the forces that were activated in the Maidan Square. And those are the people who now hold key ministry positions, Minister of Defense, Head of National Security, in this rump government that was installed by coup d'etat over the last couple of weeks. Now, what we presented in that LPAC fact sheet has come out in a smattering of other locations in the Western media. The evidence is there. BBC interviewed two of the leaders of the right sector, one of these neo-Nazi groups. And on the record, this guy said, we had to take over the country the way we did because, quote, certain ethnicities were stealing our economy. And the interviewer pressed him and said, well, what do you mean certain ethnicities? And he said, Jews, Poles, and Russians. You know, these were the targets of the Banderists, who ran a military operation with the Nazi military forces in Ukraine, exterminated tens of thousands of people, and they want to do the same thing again. And this is what Victoria Nuland, the European Union governments are backing. Now, 2 days ago, a telephone conversation between Catherine Ashton, the foreign minister of the European Union, and the foreign minister of Estonia was leaked to the media. First came out in the Russian press. The Estonian foreign minister a day later confirmed the accuracy, that the tape was legitimate and that it was an accurate report of the conversation. On February 25th, he had been in Kiev and had been there on a fact-finding trip to find out about who was behind the violence in the Maidan. And the next day, his conversation with Catherine Ashton took place, and he said, I hate to say it, but Yanukovych wasn't behind these sniper attacks. They were carried out by some of the people from the new coalition, and furthermore, the same snipers were killing both police and protesters. This is a classic covert intelligence third force operation to kick off a wave of violence. And remember, this had occurred immediately after an agreement had been reached on February 21st between Yanukovych and the political opposition parties to organize a national unity government, end the protests, end the violence, and then have new elections in the coming months to resolve the whole issue of where Ukraine would go in the future. And it was in response to that agreement that was brokered by three European foreign ministers and a representative of the Russian government. It was in response to that that the sniper violence happened and basically ripped up that whole deal. And instead you had effectively a paramilitary coup backed by the U.S. and the EU now being given legitimacy. So this conversation between Ashton and the Estonian foreign minister is out there. You can go to YouTube, you can find videos galore, but the mainstream media in the United States and Europe has by and large covered it up. Now, Dave Christie, member of the LPAC Policy Committee and a candidate, pre-candidate up in Washington State, has been in Washington, D.C. for the past week with other members of the policy committee, and he reported today that he had intervened at an event in Brookings, at the Brookings Institution in Washington, at a forum on the Ukraine.
Yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that he had gotten up and raised a question from the floor, went through the neo-Nazi illegal coup, the statement from the Estonian foreign minister, all of that. And a British woman who was on the panel basically said, you are presenting a very dangerous narrative. What's really critical here is who will control the narrative. And she didn't mention Mr. LaRouche by name, but she said that narrative has been presented by the Russian government and has been echoed all week on Russian television. I won't say by whom. And the key thing is that we must control the narrative. There was no question about, is it true or is it Goebbels propaganda? The question was, we control the flow of information to the population so we can win their backing for the confrontation, even if it leads to thermonuclear extermination. That's you know, it was a kind of a frank, one of those Bertrand Russell or H.G. Wells moments where they let it all hang out and they basically said, we're going to control the thought process of the sheep, and anybody who tries to get in our way is going to be labeled as dangerous, and we're going to go after them. So it's pretty stunning.
Yeah, it is. And to throw in here what we're all calling on people to do, to break through on this, to give the orders now's the time for impeachment. One example is Representative Marcy Kaptur, who's co-chairman of the Ukrainian caucus in Congress. She was on television this morning. And her basic message, I only saw part of it, was let's stop the bloodshed. It was heartfelt. It's true. Let's stop the bloodshed in Ukraine. But of course, Jeff, just what you're saying, the actions of LPAC, LaRouche Political Action Committee, the actions is saying who's doing the bloodshed.
Right.
The sniper operation that interjected bloodshed just at the moment when they're miserable as it was, there would be some arrangement.
Right, exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
And then you have other hot spots. This Representative Kaptur, who is issuing an appeal, fair enough. The reality that's being presented that we're doing, that the ambassador from Russia asked for yesterday in New York, that Mike Steger just is putting forward at all these caucuses out in California, it's out there. We're at a very critical moment. It may be the Ides of March, but it's in our hands to change history here.
Right.
Marsha, let me just add one point to that, because one of the things that was discussed by a number of people is this line that's coming out that Putin is trapped in a Cold War mentality. And in a couple of these discussions, I just said, well, who actually is in the Cold War mentality? We still have NATO. NATO was the Cold War alliance. NATO is expanding. We're the ones putting up the missile and anti-missile bases. You look at the world, you look at the Asia pivot, you look at the chaos that was unleashed in Thailand and throughout the Middle East. Who's determining what the policies are? It's coming from an empire, and Obama is part of that empire. And people were scratching their heads and saying, well, so you don't really think Putin is doing this? It is this question of how you break through a Goebbels propaganda blitz, which is all the U.S. media is. And, you know, some people say, well, we have blogs, we have other things. But what we need is people of courage to tell the truth. And that's why Keisha and Michael Steger and the policy committee, and especially Lynn and Helga Zepp-LaRouche, represent that anomaly. They will tell the truth regardless of the cost. And this is what we have to get across to the American people. If the Russians can play the LaRouche card, what about the Americans? Why don't we play the LaRouche card in this country?
Right. Well, speaking of the LaRouche card, one thing that Mr. LaRouche is emphasizing, calling on people to say in their own concepts, in their own words, the point that the money system is gone, money itself never had any value. And to take a couple examples Mr. LaRouche used before a staff meeting today is historically, Alexander Hamilton, but also Benjamin Franklin, had a concept of what you could do if money's just in the service, not money as the defining issue of value.
Right.
Jeff, this is a period of history which you love to study.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to restate this point again in current terms, that money is gone. It's out west where you are, Harley, the money, Wall Street is saying, sorry, there's no money, so you don't have any water.
Well, I mean, you know, look back at a moment in 20th century history that bears an enormous parallel to what's going on right now, and that was the eruption of the Weimar hyperinflation in 1923. And so, fine, people had money, but you needed wheelbarrows to wheel enough money to the store to be able to buy the most essential things. When you allow a collapse of infrastructure, a breakdown of production, Marcia, you know more than anybody about the food crisis that the world is already deeply in. The water crisis in the western states, all of these things, you know, a real economy for an expanding population living in improved and continuously more advanced conditions is all about physical production. And it's about human creativity being the characteristic feature of improvements in productivity. It's education, it's infrastructure, it's human creative brainstorming, and that's what really counts. If you don't have food, if you don't have a roof over your head, you can't eat money.
Yeah, you might have money, but you might not be able to buy water or food because it doesn't exist.
Sure, yeah, and Harley, exactly. I see the mayor of Los Angeles, I'm sorry, I forget his name now, in addition to Governor Jerry Brown, is speaking where you are at the convention. And I think the Los Angeles mayor said, oh, we'll be okay. We'll conserve our way through not having water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, there was someone, I was making a joke. I said, well, you know, we don't need a water policy. There's plenty of water on the shelves of grocery stores. And the guy said, yeah. And I said, wait, I was making a joke. And he said, oh, where's the water come from?
Right.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that just an interesting thing here is that the city of Los Angeles did pass a moratorium on fracking within the area of the city. And there's an attempt to get that done statewide. Now, some of the reasoning behind it is it's anti-oil company, it's environmentalism. But it actually does get to the point that people do recognize that there's not enough water. And, you know, this is where, again, our intervention is so crucial because people don't think big. It's not even part of the vocabulary anymore. It's conservation. It's we can do with less. There was an op-ed in the New York Times, I believe, today of a Texas professor who said the solution to the water crisis is stop eating meat. And so, because it takes so much water to produce a herd of cattle. You know, this is where you see the kind of insanity of what Lyndon LaRouche was fighting back in the 1960s, the environmentalist movement, which was a genocidalist policy from the beginning. And I think, again, by reframing this, what this person said about the narrative is partly true, except it's not a narrative. It's the difference between truth and lies.
Right.
And I think making truth the starting point here, that people who are saying we can conserve, we can cut back, are basically saying we're going to kill billions of people. And the idea of physical economy of Lyndon LaRouche is the opposite. And it's the only legitimate way to address these crises.
Yeah, and speaking of food, you may want to add this, Harley, since you're right there in the Pacific Coast. But if you take the situation where the Russian television, Russian media has had, as we've gone over, Mr. LaRouche directly reviewing who the enemy is, the British Empire, the Queen's view of what you just said, reduce the world population. We have a situation where California and Texas, the populations in New Mexico, Arizona, they're directly threatened with existence. Our national food supply is threatened. But internationally, China depends very much on exports from the United States for basic foods, for basic grains. That's because of this world regime of Wall Street and London has screwed everything up for so many decades, centuries in fact, but with NAFTA, with WTO, with world globalization. So in China, so this is year to year, this is season to season. Any water crisis here is an immediate food supply crisis for China. But on the other hand, just the opposite is the case. You get things going, get Obama out and start to move, and you can collaborate with Eastern Eurasia, with Siberia, with China on what we ought to do. And I think that's the import of Mike Steger and Keisha Rogers' collaboration, Texas-California, is both to end the we're talking about ending the drought through this political historic shift.
No, that's absolutely the case. And it's something that could have been done 40 to 50 years ago. That's the tragedy here. And, you know, one of the points that Mr. LaRouche keeps making is that you have to shape your policy today by the future. You have to be thinking for these broader horizons. And instead, we allowed small-mindedness, environmental genocidalists, and fiscal conservatives to shut down these kinds of big projects. And I think it's really crucial that a part of what we have to do is get people to think big again, think like human beings who look out to space and say, why not, as opposed to trying to figure out how to survive day to day.
Right. Well, in the final minutes, Jeff, you've mentioned Capitol Hill because you are you're often there,
right?
And doing hazmat duty,
right?
Watching where you step,
right?
But I think that things are, again, you're in an informed position to talk about prospects that people who listen to this show and who are following and are beginning to take action forever need to know. You were on the call with Mike Steger and Keisha Rogers after her election. You were on Wednesday night after the Tuesday Texas election. And a lot of people were, there were over 350, close to 400 people,
right,
on that call. And this is this is all across the United States. And so it isn't just, as one woman said on the call, I've been banging my head on this for 20 years, but it's very different now.
It
You're
is.
Talking about, you could fill in the final minutes again as a call to action for us to keep going. But you have some people quitting Congress because maybe they've been cowards, although it's understandable. Some people going to take cash in their chitch with Wall Street. But why don't you just describe the situation as we move into this week?
I'll just say, by characterization, we are very close to impeachment. It doesn't take a majority to get the ball rolling on this. There are a number of individual members of Congress who have publicly come out and said that Obama has crossed the line and should be impeached. I think probably the clearest and cleanest statement came from Congressman Steve Stockman from Texas. On the night of President Obama's State of the Union address, where Obama stood there in front of the entire U.S. Congress with the entire cabinet and Supreme Court there in the room and said that he intended to rule by executive order and by executive dictatorship. And if Congress wanted to capitulate to him, they were welcome to do so, but he was going to rule by decree and executive order. This alone was an impeachable crime, and Stockman had the integrity to walk out and announce afterwards that he was seriously considering filing impeachment. There are a half a dozen other members of Congress who have made statements both publicly and privately and who are agonizing, and who were agonizing already as you got from the illegal Libya war to the NSA surveillance revelations to the pattern of flagrant violation of the separation of powers, executive orders replacing congressional legislation. It's all there. And now, because of Obama's behavior in the Ukraine crisis, it has a very clear and immediate time deadline to get this guy out of office. There's nothing more important right now, if you have any interest in assuring the survival of mankind, than getting Obama impeached. And so, as I say, and I said it on Thursday night on the organizers' call, we've got to have a real groundswell of pressure on Congress. They've got to take this seriously. This is not a partisan issue. As I said earlier, there are Democrats, senior-ranking Democrats, who hate this guy and know that he should be impeached. There are Republicans, some of whom for genuine reasons, some of them for opportunistic reasons, who feel the same way. 70% of the population of this country wants this guy out of office now. And the Ukraine issue means that we don't have the luxury of see what happens in November and wait until after the midterm elections. This has to happen during the month of March and really during the immediate days ahead. A strong initiative on impeachment right now, a bill of impeachment, will immediately paralyze his ability to follow British orders and start a world war. So this is something that involves efforts on the part of everybody listening to this show today, and all of your friends and neighbors and relatives have to get in on this week.
Yeah, in the final seconds, let me read to you his words from Obama, March 6, from his executive order. He says, "I, Barack Obama, President of the United States of America, find that the actions and policies of persons," and then he mentions Ukraine and the Crimean region, in fact, which it's now, he's speaking of people who are part of this operation that involved capacity, these snipers and others from foreign and British interests. But he says, because of what's going on in Ukraine and Crimea, it constitutes an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States, and I hereby declare a national emergency to deal with that threat. Then he has two pages of 10 sections of orders that he can activate. So we don't need more evidence, but here it is, 48 hours old, and the particular deadline is March 16 that's been created by this British imperial brinksmanship of an election, of a referendum in Crimea, in Ukraine. So therefore, that again, it defines what we ought to be doing now. We should make pre-impeachment actual impeachment.
Yes.
So I thank Harley. Have a wonderful meeting in Los Angeles tonight at the Mike Steger for Congress and your special event.
I know we will. I don't think the president will like what we say.
Okay, good. Well, keep at it in that case. And thank you, Jeff Steinberg. Thanks, Harley Schlanger. And this is the end of the March 8th, 2014 LaRouche Show.